This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm doing a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Susan Shy. Susan is in Wooster, Ohio, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is December 15th, 2008. It is now 10:18 in the morning. And Susan, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview with me.
Thank you, Karen.
So please tell me about the quilt that you selected for the interview, which is Potluck World, card number 21, in the Kitchen Tarot.
Well, I've been doing this series on the Kitchen Tarot since 1998, and at the beginning and for a long time, it wasn't political. And then in 2007, my interest moved to politics a lot more. They had been coming there, but it just got more and more so that it was in the work. By 2007, I was putting Obama in my Kitchen Tarot pieces. The deck is 22 major cards now, and I've just begun with 56 minor cards, 78 total deck. But this piece is probably my favorite of the Obama pieces. The potluck is my choice for the Kitchen Tarot to represent the world card in the traditional tarot deck. And the concept is Obama and Clinton, during the primary election this year, bringing their gifts to the table that is a conceptual potluck meal of national, international, especially international people. Because the whole world was watching not just our presidential election, but our primary election, and wondering what was going to happen with this Democratic Party. And so this piece, which is always a spontaneously planned and then drawn and then written image, became Obama and Clinton carrying in pies to a potluck meal. As you look at the card, at the bottom as you look at the quilt, at the bottom of the quilt is a large table with plates set on it for countries from around the world. And it's not a totally embracing collection of names of countries. It's just names I thought up as I worked. And sitting on the table is my archetype figure, St. Quilter the Comforter, who is becoming more and more important to me as the world needs more and more healing. She is sort of the hostess of this conceptual potluck. And she's holding a huge bowl of something I've used a lot in my work, which is peace porridge. Behind her, in the very center of the piece, is a kitchen sink. And that represents we're putting in everything. That everything is needed here. It's like we're getting out the big guns, and in the kitchen, my image for the big guns is the kitchen sink, because of that old cliche that using everything but the kitchen sink. Well, here we're using that too. And in fact, this card almost was called the kitchen sink, but I decided I really like this concept of a potluck meal and everyone coming together. I didn't want to make this piece all about Obama, but I supported Obama right from the beginning. But I wanted to show this neck and neck energy of Obama and Clinton as they progressed through the primary. And this piece was made from the beginning of January until the beginning of April in 2008. So the primary was not really changing during that time. We didn't know who was going to win. And so I put them as equals in here just because these energies are both coming in and the world is looking at both of them, and we don't know which one is going to take over the Democratic candidacy, let alone which one might become president. So I use pies in my work as a symbol for blessings or gifts, and I decided that that's what they would carry in. Obama's pie has the word hope written on it because that was one of his big things. And for Clinton, I put faith because I thought it didn't represent her as a religious icon to people, but rather as people had faith in her reputation. They knew who she was. They had a lot of faith in her as a woman, as someone bringing things that they could expect, whereas with President Obama, his energy is about change and hope. So they're bringing this stuff in, and they're really the only people in the piece except St. Quilta, two little blessing figures on the wolves, and I'll get back to. And in the center between Obama and Clinton, there's a window. And this window, it has shutters on it and a figure standing in the window. This is the image that I brought from the traditional tarot deck that all artists who, in our baby boomer generation, many artists have created tarot decks of their own choosing, but they reference this Waite Rider deck from the early part of the century. And the world card has this figure standing in this position within sort of a window frame, actually in the world card. She's not quite in a window, but here it became a window. And the figure here has that exact pose, but she's holding two wooden spoons. She's wearing a chef's apron, which has the title of the piece on it, card number 21, the kitchen tarot, which is the subtitle. And after I painted her, and I'm drawing with airbrush very spontaneously, after I drew her, I realized it looked like my granddaughter, who's only now 4 years old, so she was 3 and a half then. It's a little bit more adult version of her, but I thought this face is more like my granddaughter than often when I attempt drawing my granddaughter, Eva. So in the end, this figure became my Obama girl. And I don't know if you know anything about the sort of culture icon Obama girl, but there is a young woman who's done a lot of YouTube videos as Obama girl who became sort of a superhero who was doing things to promote Obama. And it was all tongue-in-cheek stuff, but it was playful and it was fun. But there was a sexual overtone to it. So that when I made Eva into the Obama girl, I thought, oh, no, this is maybe not good because I don't want a sexual overtone with my granddaughter, obviously. But I realized at that point in thinking that Obama girl is not just this woman who's doing the YouTube videos with the sexual overtone. Obama girl is any woman who is supporting Obama. And when you read the text of this very large quilt, it's 85 by 76 inches. When you read the diary text on this, you will find out pretty fast that my leaning is much, much toward Obama, not toward Clinton. That it's not there in the overall visuals. But what I'm saying about the Obama girl is that my granddaughter, who is 4, is an Obama girl. My next-door neighbor, Olga, who is 100, now she's 101, she's an Obama girl. And anybody in between, anybody can be an Obama girl. It's just someone who is a woman who is supporting Obama, not buying into that idea that if you're a feminist, you have to support Clinton. So maybe you want to redirect me now because maybe I'm wandering too much.
Well, tell me about why is making Obama art important to you?
Because I'm a storyteller, but I'm not anymore just a personal storyteller. I am doing a mixture of diary and social commentary. And I guess back in 2003 there was this shift in my work from just personal diaries, from a lot of writing on my work about my own life and lives of people around me, and sort of overall cultural events in my life, to opening up to the political issues again. And I was making a piece for an exhibition of political art, and I was invited by the curator. Everybody who was tapped for this show, the curator said, I'm not going to censor anything you say. And this was around the time we were getting ready to go into Iraq the second time, the beginning of 2003. She promised that our work would be hung regardless of what we did. So this was licensed to just open up. And as I opened up and I was writing about things off the top of my head, and it was a very political piece, I realized in my writing that I had kind of shut down after the killings at Kent State. I wasn't in the crowd at Kent State when the killings happened in 1970, but I was there that weekend before, and I just found out I was pregnant, and I had gone to school there in 68 and dropped out and got married and this was 1970, and I just found out I was pregnant, and I really didn't want to lose my baby to tear gas. And I couldn't get out. They wouldn't let anybody leave campus. I left the next day, the Saturday, and I knew something really bad was going to happen. And I knew that had I stayed in school during that time, I probably would have been out on that hill, because I had joined SDS, Students for Democratic Society, and I had been involved in sit-ins and teach-ins and protests, war protests, and protesting the Oakland police coming to Kent State to recruit from our police academy. A lot of stuff back in 1968, but I dropped out and got married. So when those kids got killed, a lot of people like me sort of gave up for a while about politics, because the message we got was that if you talked your politics, if you did something about it, they might shoot you, they might kill you. And I think that's the message they wanted us to get. So I did go underground for a while. I didn't get depressed, I just disconnected from a lot of that stuff. I did what I could, but I didn't go out and march anymore and things like that. And I was amazed when the war ended, because of the protesting had turned people to the other side, to understand that we had to save the Vietnamese people, we had to save the American soldiers, we had to get out of that war. But anyway, as I was working on this piece in 2003, I realized that I had shut up about my politics, and I realized that if all of us who have these strong feelings aren't presenting them in our own little personal bully pulpits in our own artwork, then we're not helping. And I decided at that point that my work would become political again. So by 2007, I had known about Obama for, I think it was 2007. Anyway, I had known about Obama for a while, and a friend of mine told me that she thought that Obama and the Dalai Lama had a lot in common. And so I got to thinking about that, and I made a piece called Olama, Two Guys in a Pie. And that became my first Obama piece, in which I did a lot of research about him, went to Wikipedia, read his whole biography, and did a lot of note-taking, and ended up making this very large piece about both of them. And then when he decided to run for president, I just started documenting everything he was doing. And of course, you know, a lot of people became pretty much fixated on what he was up to. And I was one of them. And since my work is all about my personal feelings and what I'm focused on right now, that just came out in my writing and also in my imagery.
What are your plans for Potluck World?
Pardon?
What are your plans for Potluck World?
Well, it's been in several exhibitions already. The next thing it's going to is the Obama Quilters exhibition that Sue Whalen is doing at Montgomery University's Caffert Center in Silver Spring, Maryland in February and March 2009. That's a like a challenge quilt exhibition that she started out with 40. I think she might be up to 60 people now, that she invited people to contact her if they wanted to make a piece or had a piece about Obama, and it would be shown or attempt to show it in the space they have. And I've submitted three pieces for that, knowing that they may not all be shown, especially since my pieces are pretty large. But I'm very excited about that one. Also, this is part of my Kitchen to Row series, so it's going to be part of a deck of 22 cards, the actual Thoreau cards in a deck of the major cards called the Kitchen to Row. However, for my Kitchen to Row actual deck, I've decided to crop down my pictures to keep the politics out of it, because you don't know who is doing the Thoreau, but traditionally it's not a political thing. So this deck started out in 1998. It was totally apolitical, and now it's gotten extremely political, and I'm using the magic of Photoshop to crop it down to the areas of imagery that work for me as apolitical, and in a 3.5 by 5 image card, you can't read any of my tiny air pen writing. I use an air pen and fabric paint to write all over my work, but it's like the size of writing you do in a letter. If you're writing a letter on paper to someone. So when you shrink it down from this large size to that, it becomes the lettering becomes little lines of pattern rather than legible writing. So interesting to me, it's a form of sabotage to me because it's a very political thing, but hopefully they won't even notice that in the tarot cards because they won't be able to read the writing. So Obama and Clinton are cropped out, and the only thing of this piece that's going to be left of it in that tarot card is that central figure in the window, which is also in the traditional deck. That's what you see in that card is that central figure. And this decision allowed me to realize that I could go on doing very political work and my tarot cards because there was a point where I was afraid that I was going to have to quit doing the tarot deck because I wasn't going to quit doing the Obama work. I plan to keep doing Obama in my imagery and in my writing as long as he's active in politics. And so I thought maybe I have to stop now, having made the 22 major cards as quilts. After 10 years, maybe I would stop and just do that, but I really do want to keep going. So the cropping tool in Photoshop will be actively used to keep the deck apolitical visually. And then if people come and see my work on my website who are brought into it from the Kitchen Tarot, they'll find out what I'm up to otherwise.
What is your website?
www.turtlemoon.com.
So tell me about your interest in quilt making.
I had a mother who was raised Mennonite, who had roots in the Amish culture, and her grandfather and grandmother jumped over and became Mennonite. So she was raised Mennonite. Her family, she and her mother made all their clothes and made quilts and things like that. I grew up as a little girl going to church with her on Wednesdays once a month to the Ladies' Aid Society at the Church of the Brethren at East Chippewa Church in Smithville, Ohio, where all the ladies sat around a quilt frame and talked and gossiped and laughed and worked on these quilts that were, the tops were given to them by someone or weren't given, but were worked on for these people by the Ladies' Aid, and they would get paid for their quilting and donate that money to service work that the church did, outreach to help people. And I remember sitting under the quilt frame and watching those left hands, or some people right hands, you know, the hand that's underneath to tell where the quilting's going, to tell how, when the needle comes down through, wondering how on earth they could sew when their hands were holding still. And sitting under there like a little kid sitting under a tent. That's my first memory of quilting. And as I grew up, I learned to sew as a little girl and made all my clothes with my mother. She made my clothes up through high school and I took over, but I made my doll clothes and things that I wanted to make, exit 4-H and home ec and all that. And I was painting as a little girl and doing a lot of writing as a little girl, working with clay as a little girl. And so these things all came together in my artwork when I was in college as an art student. I always knew I was going to be an artist. And in college, a woman named Miriam Shapiro came to my school, the College of Worcester, and did a residency a couple of times, and both times I interacted with her a lot. She was a feminist, and she was running around the country giving lectures, meeting women artists, and telling them to take what they're learning from their mothers and put that in their artwork if they wanted to make a feminist statement, making the point that all of this beautiful artwork we made was art. It wasn't just women's work. And so I, as a painter, decided to start sewing my paintings. And so we didn't have the term art quilt back then. This was the late 70s. There wasn't the term art quilt until the mid-80s. So I didn't quite know what to call it. I just called them paintings. But I got permission from my prof to stop working on stretch canvas. And that way, the other benefit was that way I was able to take the work home, rolled up in a bag, and work on it and bring it back instead of having to drag a huge canvas around, which I couldn't do. So I had the joy of being able to merge all these things that I'd done since I was a little girl, painting, sewing, writing, and work with clay, which became, for a while I was embellishing my work quite a bit with clay and beads. And I've gotten away from that now. I'm really back kind of full circle to the paintings, and the only thing different from what I was doing back in my junior high days in my bedroom with a canvas is that now I'm working on a lighter weight cotton, and I'm merging my sewing and my writing into my painting. And so I feel really good about this because it's like this one form is connecting all these energies I like to work with, and I'm making what I consider time capsules now. Where if I pull out a quilt from, let's say, 2006 and started reading it, it would bring back all these memories as if I were reading a diary. And these are not, when I write on my work, I never am copying from a diary. People get that idea, but I'm writing off the top of my head exactly what's on my mind right then, and I date my entries a lot of times, almost always. And so later on, they become fascinating to just pop in and look at, but I couldn't stand reading the whole thing at once, nor could I ever stand to do a transcript of one of them. And I've had a few art historians be kind of upset with me because I don't make a transcript of my work. But what has become my habit to make up for that is that I write on my piece. Let's say I write for half an hour with my air pen, and then I turn around and I have a piece of paper there and I write down a little sentence about what I just wrote about. And it's a list of the topics that are in that particular art quilt painting so that I can go back now with my newer pieces and I can reference and I can say, well, this is going on and this is going on and this happened and I wrote about this. But that's as close as I'm going to get to doing a transcript because the time to make a transcript would be the time I could be making some art. That's not going to happen from me.
So tell me about the quilting part, the process for you.
For a long time, I was hand sewing all my quilts from the late 70s on. And then I had a few attempts, like in 1990, when my husband Jimmy and I finally got married after 14 years. I got a new sewing machine, and I decided to use the sewing machine on my quilt. I thought it would make them go faster, and that was a real failed experience because it seemed so flat, and I was into dimension. I wanted really beautiful sewing with a good texture, so I pretty much stayed away from it yet then. Then in 93, at the beginning of the year, I started working with the air pen, and all of my painting career life since I was a child, I have tried to make very sharp, very crisp lines with a brush and always failed. And I never could find anything in the way of a pen of any kind that made lines that I liked on a painting. So at the end of 92, Jimmy got me an air pen that he found out I was interested in, didn't know anything about, and in 93 I started working with that and it started to make it behave. And it took me about a year to really get it to behave with the fabric paint. Now I teach it. I've been teaching it for about 5 years now in my classes with my other airbrush and brush painting and quilting work. But anyway, this air pen changed things to the point where with the crispy little line writing I could do that was very rich and very black and very permanent because it was pigment paint, now I had the problem that my hand stitching was getting in the way of my writing, and it was the stitching was too big and causing the writing to be overshadowed. So I decided that maybe it was time for me to go to machine quilting. And in 94, I backed off first, and I made less hand quilting because I'd been doing very elaborate, very dense quilting and a lot of beading. But by 94, I started to back off to the point where I didn't even want to use the beads anymore. Then by 96, I was, I'm sorry, 2000, I meant 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, all those dates. If I said them wrong, I need to correct that.
That's fine.
Okay. In 2006, I was taking care of my granddaughter for a year and a half, and by 2006, my fingertips were getting very numb. And I finally have understood by now that what was causing it probably was caffeine, that I can't tolerate caffeine very well. And when I have chocolate or especially coffee or caffeinated tea, I get this buzz in my fingers that keeps them from functioning very well for handwork. So that was kind of in a way, a blessing in disguise that pushed me into going over to the hand, to the machine sewing. When I started to machine sew in 2004, my friends all told me I couldn't do that. That was a big part of my work, was the beading and the hand stitching. And I really didn't want to believe that, but it was a lot of peer pressure that seems to be pretty effective with most of us. But by 2005, in the middle of the year, I had made my first really large piece with the machine quilting, and it was sold into Jack Walsh's collection, John M. Walsh III Art Quilt Collection, which was the green light for me. I just decided that he could have had any of my quilts he wanted, and he chose that one, which is, it's all about the painting and the writing. It's not about the sewing. And that was it. After that piece, I started putting one line of hand stitching all the way around the border edge of all my pieces. It's a little nod to my old hand sewing, and it also helps the border edge lay a little flatter. But it's mainly a little bit of an excuse for me to do some hand sewing, and it's just enough. But there's no beading in these. I sew one little Buddha boy bead on the corner of each piece, and for a while I've had a little Buddha girl framework bead that I sew with the Buddha boy. The Buddha boy is, I call them my green temple Buddha boy beads. I put one on each quilt. They are a plastic bead from a bead store in Santa Barbara, California called Beads. And they are just a little, maybe 1 inch tall, maybe less, green Buddha sitting in lotus style. And I started out with 77 of them when I bought them out when I was in the store. And I thought I would have this series with this one bead on it. But as I got near the end, I called the store, and I ended up with 200 more of them, and I think I can get more. So I can keep making quilts with Buddha boys on them for a long time. So it's a little blessing bead, and it's also, to me, it's a little bit humorous that you want beads, here's a bead, that you only get this one.
That's cute.
So he's always there. He's always that little blessing guy. I wanted to go back to the potluck piece just really quick because I realized I never did talk about the wolves on there and the Buddha girls that are sitting on them. There's just a little more imagery there I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
If that's okay.
Uh-huh.
There's these two wolves, and they're big, and they're on the table, and they're yellow. They're yellow dogs, and that's another little secret pun that the yellow dog Democrat is someone who would rather vote for a yellow dog than vote for a Republican. So they're yellow dog wolves. One of them says trust on its body in large writing. The other one says tolerance on its body. And they're the guardians of the potluck. They're there to make sure that when the world comes together for this potluck, there will be trust and tolerance. And each one of them has a little Buddha girl sitting on its back with a peace symbol, and she's radiating peace energy. And also, there are on the shutters of the door, of the window, that the world figure is in, that Eva figure, on the shutters there are little heads of people, and they're in rainbow colors, each one a color of the rainbow, and that's the idea of incorporating people from all over the world and all races and all cultures coming to this thing. And there are fortune cookies on this piece. There are six fortune cookies. Six is a number for success. And I always loved putting fortune cookies in my work way back to my early college days. So I put six of them in there, and they ended up, most of them are transcripts here. There's a breaking of my own little rule of not copying things. I was so impressed with Caroline Kennedy's op-ed letter to the New York Times endorsing Obama for president. On the first fortune cookie, I tried to transcribe by leaving out parts, you know, using some ellipses and leaving out parts of this letter, and then I realized I could move this to the other fortune cookies. So you progress through the fortune cookies and you read her entire op-ed letter to the editor through them. And that was a sort of a good luck thing for Obama. And and around the figure in the window, there are four symbols in the corners of that window. And if you look at the top left corner, there's a paring knife. And that is that's my image that I'm going to be using in the minor cards of the kitchen tarot, as I'm going to have paring knives instead of swords. And then in the top right, I have green Pyrex measuring cups, and those Pyrex cups will be my symbol for the cups suit in my kitchen tarot. As you look at the bottom right, there's a little wooden spoon, and that is my symbol for the wands in the tarot series. In the bottom left corner, there's a pot holder, and I'm going to be using pot holders as my icon for the symbol of coins or pentacles. So that's what I wanted to add about.
Why do you think quilt makers are embracing Obama so greatly?
Well, I think first of all, I think it's more art quilters than traditional quilters, and there's a difference there. I think that art quilters tend to be more funky, more liberal, probably a lot more Democrat. Traditional quilters, not saying anything bad about traditional quilters, remembering that my mother and grandmother were traditional quilters, but my mother would be an Obama girl, no doubt. no doubt, and my dad. but anyway, I think traditional quilters aren't telling stories in their work, for the most part. That's another big difference. They are, for the most part, working with beautiful imagery and patchwork or an applique, that they're focusing on the beauty of the image and not telling a story of any kind. And I'm sure there are exceptions to that, but that's just a stereotype that I'm throwing out for this reason. And also, it's interesting that when Vicki Mangum sent out a call for quilts for a political exhibition at the International Quilt Festival this last fall. So she sent out this call in the summer. She wanted, I think it was called Political Patchwork.
Yes, it was.
Okay. She sent out a call for quilts. And she wanted this to be shown right before the election, and she wanted to have a full representation of both sides. You know, she wanted Democrat and Republican. She wanted stuff back from the primary elections and everything. And her problem was that she couldn't find any McCain quilts. And she says to me, where can I get a hold of somebody who's doing a McCain quilt? And I said something very snide. I don't want to put it in here. I made an evil little reference to a character that reminds me of McCain. But my comment in seriousness was that I haven't seen any art quilters doing McCain quilts. And I think this tells you something about these art quilters tend to be liberal people who are artists first and quilters second, and they tend to be liberal. And you're going to have a hard time finding a McCain quilter. Now, maybe there are traditional quilters who are making stuff. Maybe she found something in the end. And I didn't go to the Texas, I didn't go to that festival, so I didn't see the exhibition. I don't know what she had there. But I just remember that very distinctly, that she could not find the McCain quilters and could find a lot of Obama quilters. I think we're risk takers. We're people who are interested in forward thinking. We're liberal. Some of us, like including me, are radical, and we just naturally fall in line with Obama and his energy.
Now, you've recently moved to using bamboo batting.
Uh huh.
Tell me a little bit about bamboo batting and why you like it.
Well, just a real quick throwback to why I'm interested in green stuff, or to show that I was, I guess. In 1989, I started a project called the Green Quilt Project, which was an international project for 15 years in the end. At the beginning, I thought it would be forever, but I wore out, and in 2004, I ended it. And you can find on my website, there's a link from any page in my website, there's still a link at the bottom to the Green Quilts Project. But it stopped in 2004, but you can read some of its history. My best friend Robin Schwalb, who is an art quilter, very full art quilter from New York City, and I worked on the project together for those 15 years, and we have a big archive of slides of the work. But the idea was that could use quilting energy in a cosmic sense, in as a metaphor or a mental, emotional energy to help heal the world. And you would make your quilt, and you didn't have anyone judge whether or not it was a green quilt. You would decide that. But the idea was to incorporate prayer, meditation, energy, whatever you wanted to call it, for healing of the earth while you were making it. And most of those quilts were storytelling quilts. It just naturally was that way. There were one or two people who put in patchwork quilts, geometric quilts, but for the most part they were something that you could look at and you could tell what was up from the imagery. And you could work on anything from the earth in general down to even a specific person or animal that you wanted to have healing for, or for a species, or for water or air. You know, it could be anything involving the microcosm or the macrocosm of the earth. So I quit doing that in 2004 simply because most of the people who were going to make a green quilt had done it and kind of thought it was a once or twice thing or for a while, but they were, you know, it was getting old. And I was running out of, like you said, we do too much multitasking, we try to simplify, so I ended the project. So fast forward now to 2007, I guess it was still just last year, and I was asked to test this bamboo batting that Fairfield Processing was coming out with, because they had read about my green quilts project somewhere and thought I would be a good person to be one of the testers. And I just really leaped on this because I was so excited to have a product that would be more user-friendly for the earth. Because, you know, I was using polyester batting before that for a long time, and then when I switched to machine quilting, I could go to cotton batting because even though it was drier and it would drag your thread and needle as you hand-stitched, I wasn't hand-stitching anymore. So I had gone over to a cotton batting. But anyway, I tested this batting for them, and I loved it. They had 100% bamboo. They had a batting that was 80% bamboo and 20% organic cotton, and one that was 50-50 bamboo cotton. And they all handled about the same. It was really interesting. But I think that the difference would be that if they had the 100% bamboo, you'd probably see absolutely no creasing in your quilts after they were folded and unfolded, because bamboo is so flexible, and it bends over and it unbends so much, which is interesting because my husband is an avid fly fisherman, and he only fishes with bamboo rods that people he knows make. They're just sort of the snob culture of the elitists of fly fishing. And they really are into these lovely works of art in themselves, these bamboo rods that are nothing like the ones that you take a piece of bamboo and you fish with it. It's a whole decomposition and reconstruction of the bamboo, and it's amazing. But anyway, this was also a way for me to have another connection to my husband. If he's working with bamboo, I'm working with bamboo. So that was great. But here are the cool things about the bamboo in terms of the earth. Bamboo is an extremely, probably the fastest growing grass in the world. And it's sort of a cross between a grass and a tree. And they can make fiber out of it very fast. The thing that I also love about it, like I said, is that it folds over and doesn't crease like cotton does. Cotton is really crease problematic. You can quilt this stuff 6 to 8 inches apart, which I don't do, but that just shows you how this stuff isn't going to crumble like cotton would. It really holds together well. It's slippery. Your needle goes in and out of it very nicely compared to cotton. So the 50-50 product that they came out with is a little bit creasy, a little bit of a drag on your needle, but not as much as cotton. But I just love that it's renewable and it's naturally antibacterial, so they don't put any crud on these bats, no chemical stuff to make it antibacterial like they were doing with polyester for a long time. I don't know if they still are. One thing they need to do is they need to make sure they're getting the bamboo from a fair trade commitment with some farmers who are doing some holistic work with their farming so that they're not raping the earth. I think we're not there yet. I think China especially is monocropping its bamboo, which is really very harmful to the environment. Whenever you monocrop anything, in a big way. It's not good, and animals don't eat bamboo. So it's harmful to the ecosystem to only have bamboo growing. And I hope they can come up with somebody who's going to be small farmers working the bamboo for them and being more conscientious of having a variety of crops in together. And I'm certainly not a farmer, so I don't have the answers on that, but I just know I love working with bamboo batting. And it makes me feel that it's a lot better statement. And I also wish somebody would invent some fabric paint that is not petroleum plastic based, because right now all we have to work with are fabric paints that work really well, are very, very beautiful and easy to handle, but they are chemically nasty, and we need some organic fabric paints if that's ever going to be possible. And in the meantime, I always lecture my students about using up all their paint, wiping their brushes on rags, not in paper towels, and not sloshing them around in the water to clean them, and trying to keep as much of the paint as possible from going back into the water, which is something that as children we were never taught. And I also lecture them a lot about using a respirator when they're working with an airbrush or when they're heat setting any other fabric paints, and using a respirator when they're working with any art supplies that have chemical changes that go on or have fumes. And I've been sort of the queen of respirator artwork since the late 70s, I guess, when I was kind of treated like a nitwit for suggesting to artists that you should wear a respirator. Luckily now it's become a lot more acceptable among students. They're getting it a lot more that we are working with toxins. So the less toxins we have to work with, the better. And I look forward to eco-friendly art products becoming a trend more, not just bamboo batting and not just recycled paper.
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, you know, it's really interesting. I've thought about that a lot because I had such a hard time transitioning from the woman who is known for all the handwork and the beading to the woman who is hopefully known for the stories and the images of the stories. I decided that I don't need for anybody to remember that I did all that hand sewing or all that beautiful beading. I mean, I want those pieces to be saved and archived and remembered, but I want to be remembered as an artist who told stories that made a difference in the world, that helped improve the world. And that's what I care about the most.
Excellent. Is there anything that you would like to share that I haven't touched upon?
No, just that anybody interested in my work, I try to keep all my new work posted on my website in the gallery. If you don't remember the website name, just Google Susan Shy website, and it'll come up, turtlemoon.com. It's Turtle Moon Studios. And I teach at my home, and I teach out around the world. I teach really strange but exciting art camps at my house that I describe as a biosphere, where up to 5 students come and live with my husband and me for a week at a time. And we have a 5-day class that's bracketed by the travel days. And they each have their own bedroom at my house, and we work in our studios. You have 24-hour access to the studios, and it's the only place where I teach airbrush, which is too big and bulky of equipment for me to take to teach at other places, and I can't work with a large group of students with airbrush because it's too much one-on-one for that. But when you come here, you learn airbrush, air pen, and regular brush painting, and you learn that the most important thing you learn, hopefully, is that everyone is an artist and that you can draw and you can write and you can paint, even though you were probably told when you were a small child that you couldn't do those things. And somewhere in between small child and adult, you gave up on drawing. And that my message is that drawing is an acquired skill just like any other acquired skill like playing piano. So I want people to learn that they can express themselves and they can make art that's valid. And it just happens that I use air pen, airbrush, and brush painting and writing to do that, but it could be a lot of things. But I mainly want to be known as my teaching skill, to be known as the person who made a lot of people realize their own artist self and able to spontaneously work without being so judgmental.
Tell me me about your garage door.
Oh, I haven't put it on my website yet. I have to do that real soon. That's the biggest painting that I've made since I made the high school prom murals that I watched being burned on a bonfire after the prom. It was quite a shock. I think those murals were 9 feet tall, and I think this one, I haven't measured this, but it's a double garage door, and I think it's 7 feet plus all the framework around, you know, there's a big frame around the door. I painted that too, so I think in the end it's about 8 feet tall and probably about 17 feet wide, including the frame. And I painted it with the theme in mind, personal landscapes, because my local artist group, WAGE, which was an acronym for Wayne Artist Group Effort, that's our little support group for my area, our theme for our exhibitions coming up this January, February, is personal landscapes. So my personal landscape is my husband Jimmy and me in our house on one side of the garage door, and it leads over to my daughter Gretchen, her husband Mike, and their daughter Eva, who live in Lakewood, Ohio, an hour from us, right up by Lake Erie, and their house, and all of our cats are in it, and the houses, the people, and the cats are entwined, but coming up behind Jimmy and me is a giant Barack Obama head, and he's like rising over the horizon like a big sun, and next to him, what started out to be the chimney on our house ended up being the Statue of Liberty, who's kind of leaning into Obama. And I used house paint. I used the best house paint I could find, and I had these Createx liquid pigment bottles that I found I'd bought years and years ago that I used to make all my colors out of the white house paint. So it's hopefully going to hold up longer than my front door painting did. My front door mural is now sitting inside my breezeway, and I have a door on my front door that's not a mural. The first thing you see on my website is that old door mural. And when we took it down and we put up a regular house door, lots of people thought we moved away, we died or something. And when I started painting the Obama mural, people would stop. Even the first day when all I had done was drawn the outlines of it on with the brush, people would stop and say, "You don't know me, but I'm so happy to see that you are putting art on your house again because I miss your front door mural so much." And this is a very middle-class, sedate neighborhood from the late 60s. And, you know, it's one of those neighborhoods that doesn't have sidewalks, but now the trees are big, and and the people who live here are, the one generation is moving off to nursing homes or dying, and the next generation is coming in with their little kids. So it's one of those kind of neighborhoods where it's very conservative, to be honest. And I was so amazed that all through the making of this mural, which took me a month, people would stop in, or people would stop and yell from their cars. One time some guy just stopped and went, "Go Obama!" And I was really happy to hear that in my neighborhood. It's been really nice because a lot of people have told me they're so happy to see the art back. And I've had people who assumed that if Obama didn't win, I would paint him out. And I said, no, that's never going to happen. And other people, just the other day, I had a woman who told me that she just knew I painted him in. I added him after he won the election. And I said, no. He was there in the composition from the very beginning, and he will stay there. It's a very upbeat piece, and it's the writing on it is not done with air pen, which wouldn't work on a vertical surface anyway. You have to have that laying flat. I used as small a brush as I could, but I had to write fairly large, and I decided not to use black paint because I didn't want to make the mural get really dark. So the writing is in colors. They're just enough darker than what they're on that they show up. The weirdest thing about it is that it kind of glows. Like in the evening and at night when a light hits it, or even walking past it in the daytime, it's got this really, I can't understand, glow that must come from this white house paint. It's glowing out through the colors I mixed into it. But it's a very beautiful glow that makes me feel like it's just, it's got the kind of energy that I talked about with the Green Quilts Project, where I said that So what we'd be doing with the green quilts was creating like a conceptual blanket around the earth with these quilts that would be this layer of energy. It would be like each one of these quilts would be like a storage battery holding all this good energy, and that the earth could tap into that. And I feel like that's what my garage mural means to me, that there's this energy there for hope and change and love and peace. A lot of peace symbols all over it because I'm, of course, a pro-peace, anti-war person from way back, and that will never change. But that's incorporated there. It doesn't hit you over the head, but it's incorporated in what I hope is a very loving image.
Well, I think this is a great way to end, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to do this interview with me.
Oh, thank you, Karen. I'm so happy to do it.
And we're going to conclude our interview at 11:08.